Hey, this is Robert, and welcome to The Outfall, where we share stories about water and infrastructure. We've previously dived into the world of wastewater, uncovering the science of wastewater epidemiology and the challenges posed by those pesky wipes. But today, we'll shed light on an overlooked hero of our urban landscapes, sewers. They may lack a certain amount of dazzle, but are silently monumental in safeguarding our environment and health. These sewers are like living entities silently at work beneath our feet. But how do you tell a story about sewers, right? I was not sure, but I knew there was someone in my circle with an unmatched zeal for all that flows underground. Today, meet a vibrant Texan, a three-decade expert whose infectious enthusiasm might just convince you that sewers indeed have a story worth hearing.
I'm Lee Thomas. I am an engineer first, but my role with my firm, HR Green, is regional manager. I'm in the water business line, everything associated with water and wastewater and reuse systems and stormwater. And so in my role, generally speaking, I'm working to help my firm grow their presence. My background, I kind of fell into this, literally fell in love with the industry and what it really means to protect human health and provide, you know, clean water solutions in the end, because that is the water cycle for sure.
What is something, if you could look back, you know, you said you fell in love with it, you know, what are some things that you maybe when you were really green, you didn't realize that you're going to enjoy?
Hydraulics, hydrology, being able to see flows in my head. I believe every sewer system tells a story, and every bit of data that you collect on a sewer system shows you what it's been through, what it's conveying, and, you know, really what is its life expectancy.
So, all right, I love this. Every sewer tells a story. So you've been tasked with looking at a new collection system. What are your initial steps?
The first thing is to understand what was that collection system designed to do. Is it serving residential people and homes? Is it showing, you know, that it's serving a lot of commercial development in terms of people that make things? You know, so understanding how the infrastructure was originally, the sewer system was designed and what it was designed to serve is step one, seeing it as a whole and then breaking it down into the components of how that sewer network is connected and flows, how it takes it, you know, how, because we're conveying water more than we're conveying waste. I think that's not always understood by the general public. Right. Wastewater flow is, you know, 90, they see up to 98% water, right? And, right. You know, so we're trying to understand how we convey that stream, that waste stream, such that it makes it to a point that can handle it and, you know, ultimately, hopefully discharge it such that it can go back into the water cycle, the system. And so I like to look at the whole picture, understand the history, and break it down into components. When I was an intern with Austin Water, I had to do a lot of manual research. How materials were selected by engineers as far back as the 30s, how, you know, routes were planned for infrastructure, and understanding that history really helps you appreciate the why and the how. I mean, there were actually conversations written back in the 30s about engineers arguing with, you know, city leaders about choosing the right materials or putting pipes in the right place. And I have to believe my engineering predecessors were always trying to do the right thing. So really understanding that history is really key. And it's key to the past, it's key to the present, and it's really essential to, okay, understanding the future, because every sewer system has a start, but it also has a life and a, you know, renewal period. And so we just want to keep working with the infrastructure that we have below and above our feet to serve our citizens, our stakeholders, and ensuring that we're conveying safely and effectively waste such that no human or living thing is impacted by that. I really believe in that stewardship. Sometimes it gets me in trouble, but I really believe in, I'm in this industry to be a public steward.
You know, there's cost challenges with municipalities. What happens to a sewer system when it doesn't have proper stewardship?
In a lot of ways, sewer can be out of sight, out of mind. I don't blame people for wanting to flush their toilets and turn on their faucets and it goes somewhere, right? But when we don't acknowledge that it does have to go somewhere and nothing lasts forever, keeping an eye on, monitoring how our systems are performing is really critical. And when we don't, and failures occur, things happen to the environment, to people, to animals that possibly could have been avoided, right? So it's not a bottomless pit. And I always tell people, particularly when we're, you know, trying to do development work, new construction somewhere, right? Unfortunately, when sewer systems are planned, there's a life expectancy for any type of infrastructure, right? And so this 50-year life is something people toss around. That 50-year life is in a vacuum. That's if you take that particular piece of structure, that pipe, that manhole, that plant, that pump, what have you, and you say, okay, if this operates exactly as it's intended, then its life could be 50 years. But we don't operate our sewer systems in a vacuum, and stuff happens, and particularly in sewer, right? It happens, right? And so when that isn't acknowledged and failures occur, then we become reactive, right? And so when we're reacting to a problem, we don't have time to think about, okay, what could we have done to prevent this? We're just reacting. We're putting out fires.
So break down cleaning. I think some folks may have in their mind what cleaning the sewers is or what's involved with that.
Sure. Yeah. So using a pressure nozzle, right, is the goal. You're trying to cause water exerted by pressure to hit the walls of the pipe. So you're trying to work in this circle, going from an access point, typically a manhole or some kind of junction structure that allows you to enter the pipe with a hose and nozzle that is connected to a truck tank that is filled with water. It can be, you know, it can be water that the truck picked up from a waterway that is authorized by the public entity. It can be water that, you know, was connected to a hydrant through a separation gap where they use that for cleaning, or other sources. You can reuse sewer water to clean the sewer. But your whole goal is to be able to reach the entire circumference of the pipe end to end, and you are spraying water at a pressure, and you want to monitor that pressure. You know, you're usually 2000 psi or above, but you're monitoring that pressure so that you don't cause damage, so that you're not trying to damage the pipe through high pressure jet cleaning. You're just trying to clean, remove debris, flush it off, and then follow that with vacuuming it out, right? You want to remove whatever you clean off the wall. It's a real misnomer where people go upstream on a manhole, put in a flusher nozzle, push that flow downstream, and then they're shocked. They come back 30 days or whatever later. That debris is back. Well, the positive, because it the flow, like we talked about velocity, the flow wasn't moving. And so it just came back. And so you truly want to push up with your flow, go upstream, not downstream, so that the flow comes back and then you capture it in the downstream manhole and remove it and continue this process in the system. Your wastewater system is a network of pipes, right? If you take yourself from the house to the plant, the house, you're discharging through a lateral or service line, is the terminology. You're connecting that to a pipe, your street, your alley, what have you. It is collecting that flow, right? And it's usually smaller, 8-inch plus. And then that feeds into, as other pipes come together, it feeds into a bigger main. Ultimately, we get from collectors to interceptors, bigger pipes that ultimately take it, the bigger pipe takes it all the way to the discharge point at the wastewater treatment plant. And so when we look at our network of pipes and we're looking at ways to increase that conveyance capacity, that ability to push that flow to the plant, not exit the pipe in the system, ensuring that we have the volume available is what cleaning can accomplish. And so cleaning is actually a operation that can, if done effectively, can extend the life and the performance of your collection pipes in a cost-effective way.
When you flip the page to get the next chapter and how to improve it, what are some tools that you can do?
You can talk about rehabilitation.
Right. Because, right, all is not lost. It's a living, breathing system.
We're constantly trying to keep it living and breathing, right? And, you know, renewal of a piece of pipe, you know, a manhole or what have you. It's, you know, understanding its story, at least how it got there, and its purpose, kind of going back to that discussion. And then, you know, how, whatever its issues, right? So what's its existing condition? What are its problems? Is it purely structural? Does it need to be bigger? Does it need to be tighter in terms of sealed? You know, is it allowing other water from the, is it in a creek and it's allowing water in it or what have you? Does it have operational issues? Does it need to be realigned? You're looking at all these factors at once so that you can make a decision that's truly going to renew that asset and not just put a Band-Aid on it. That's one thing I think in this industry that we're trying to fix our problems as fast as they arrive, because we are so reactive. Sometimes that doesn't always come out to be the permanent solution. So ideally you're looking for a permanent solution. And so you're understanding, okay, what's there? What kind of material is it now? Okay. And then what size is it? And, you know, what's its history? Where has it failed? Where we had issues? You're looking at it inside out. You're walking it. You're saying, okay, this is physically where it is. This is physically how I need to get to the site. That is a limiting factor. I can't do something if I can't get there, right? I can't get there with equipment, tools, materials, what have you. And then you're looking below the ground and you're looking inside the pipe, inside the manhole, and you're visualizing what's going on. And sometimes you're scanning it with some of the technologies we have today. We really have gone a long way. We can get really good image, a scanned image, a sonar image below the flow. We're getting as much data as we can afford to get and for what decision we're trying to make, right? In terms of renewing that asset. And then we're going down decision processes to understand, okay, These are the problems I'm trying to address. These are the methods to address that. There are what we call open cut methods, where we're just digging and replacing that asset. And there are times, many, many times, where that is necessary, particularly if it's dramatically undersized, because you can't got more flow than you can push through it, or its alignment. You know, maybe it doesn't need to be in that creek anymore, or maybe it needs to have a little bit more grade, a little more fall to it, so we don't have so many debris problems. There are a number of reasons that we may have to dig it. But what we're trying to evolve to is more semi to full trenchless. And when we say trenchless, we mean you have to dig a trench to get it in there, right? Get the pipe, get the material such that it can renew the asset. And so trenchless methods have really come a long way, but it's understanding where they work and most importantly, where they don't work. I always tell people that, you know, understanding where something fails, can fail, witnessing failures is really key. Even as we evolve to artificial intelligence methods, and they're coming a long way, they're amazing. Artificial intelligence is just like the learned perspective of a person. I can look at something differently than somebody who's maybe only been doing it a year or two, because the more you see that image in the back of your mind, the more you recall what that image means and the effects of that image, that break in that pipe. What does that mean? What can you classify that as?
So give me an example of an image. Boom. You're looking at an image.
I'm looking at a crack in a pipe, right? It's just a crack, but it's running along the length. You know, somebody that is right, just looking at that immediately and has never seen it before. Oh, wow, it's cracked. It's terrible. To me, it's okay. I'm looking at the degree of the crack. What could have caused the crack? Okay, it's this material. It's clay pipe. Okay, some clay pipe gets cracked when it's installed because it's fragile that way. And so I'm going to look at that crack and classify that crack much differently than somebody that just started doing this, right? And so the same thing goes with AI. AI is learning from these images. And so we're all doing a little bit of AI in our brains when we see an image and see an image. We see a crack, we learn, okay, that crack is not as bad as this crack over here, which has an open joint and has, you know, soil visible behind it. Okay, that's potential failure. We learn that. We learn that a surface crack is not the same as when we can see dirt behind it. We got a potential failure here.
Yep.
Right? And so when we're looking at methods for renewal, we're considering that. So there are a number of methods out there. From, you know, what we're seeing a lot of is the cured in place pipe method. People like that. It's an inverted sock of a felt that's filled with resin, and the catalyst is heat, right? You're cooking it and you're inverting it in a pipe and you're cooking it, whether it's with pressure, water, head, what have you, and you're heating it. So that's one way, but it doesn't work everywhere. It's not the only way. Are you pulling a new pipe within a pipe? Slip lining, you know, and the number of different types of slip lining. Are you putting in form pipe? Are you putting in sprayed applied pipe? Are you pipe bursting? Are you actually using something, a hammer basically, and you are actually, or splitting, hammering and splitting the pipe in front of you and pulling a new pipe behind it? That's semi-trenchless. It's not trenchless because you require a trench to get it in there. But these methods all have their place. And so it's really, really important to get the right condition data and a full picture inside out of your pipe. Well, how do you get there on the ground? What do you do when you get below the ground to understand how you could actually renew that? It's really a full picture view.
What's another misconception that you sort of, you know, maybe there are opportunities to teach, you know, that you find?
Number one, you know, people think that, well, the utility should know that pipe was going to fail. No, stuff happens. right? And yep. And we do have acts beyond us, you know, that happen in a system. And so because it's old, does that mean that we should know it's going to fail? Not necessarily. There are 100-year-old plus pipes around the world that do just fine. And there's really no reason. We're trying, the lesson I think we're really trying to convey is the concept of managing your infrastructure effectively and understanding the signs, right? There are signs that we can monitor. That is true. You can globally say, okay, once something gets beyond its life, whatever that life is that you establish for that infrastructure, is there a plan? But those plans get changed too. And so I really think people need to understand that utilities are trying their best to serve the public with the resources they have. And I mean people and money. And, you know, utilities are funded by various sources, but it's rates, right? So whatever you're paying for your water and sewer is what's going into a fund. Now there's other sources, loans, grants, you know, combination of different sources, you know, sources coming down from the state, the federal, and so forth that you can utilize, but they're constantly planning for that. And more than anything, having managed operations side of things and had crews in the field responding to failures, they really put their heart and soul into that. And they're really, it's hard work. It's really hard work. Our operators are probably whether they're operating a collection system or a treatment plant, they're probably the most undervalued component. Engineers, we try to do our jobs. We try to apply engineering principles the best we can, particularly in water and wastewater system. We're licensed because we need to protect public health and we need to be accountable and liable for that. But our operators are licensed too, and they work really hard. And so anytime there is a failure in a system and you see that operations crew working, thanking them and saying, you know, thank you for trying to protect human health and fixing this problem at 2 o'clock in the morning, or trying to restore, you know, service to my area, maybe a wastewater line broke or a water line broke or what have you, kind of throwing all the infrastructure together. I really think it is a misnomer in the industry that, or to the general public even, that everybody's not trying to do their part. I have to believe that everybody wants to protect human and health and safety.
A perfect way to end this podcast episode.
Thank you.
Well said. Big shout out to Lee for joining us. Thank you. Every sewer does tell a story, and these underground systems are critical pieces of our infrastructure that impact the health and well-being of our communities. You know, while challenges such as, you know, aging infrastructure and limited funding persist, advancements in technology, proactive planning, and our own frontline utility workers ensure that every sewer system continues to tell a story of responsible stewardship. We have an exciting lineup of stories in production. We can't wait to bring them to you. Until then, subscribe and stay curious.